Well, most of all, I suppose I think it's been a great privilege to be at the heart of so many different worlds. Leicester is a very religiously diverse city set in the heart of a Middle England countryside. So being close to other faiths, to the universities, to schools, to business, to the rural agricultural world, and trying to see ways in which the church can serve those worlds and speak into those worlds, that's been the greatest privilege. But what we've also, I think, been able to do in the time I've been there is to build the institutions of the diocese around the cathedral in ways that make it very clear that even though the number of Muslims and Hindus and Sikhs are growing all the time in Leicester, and even though we want to work closely with them, the Church of England and the Christian community is not going away. So I think the Christian community is much more visible and has a greater sense of permanence in Leicester than perhaps it did when I arrived, and I think that's the thing I'm most thankful for.
What sort of a challenge was it for you in trying to bring those faiths together when you arrived?
Well, I arrived just before the millennium, and when I was installed in the cathedral, we signed an agreement with the faith leaders of Leicester in the cathedral in front of everyone who was there to do everything we could to work together. I think in some ways we've achieved that. We had the 9/11 disaster early in this century, the Iraq War, the 7/7 bombings in London, the whole series of threats to cohesion. And on each occasion, we came out publicly together, we stood together, we prayed together, and we worked with the police and with local government and others to show that we were absolutely determined not to let these events divide us from each other. There are still enormous challenges. You know, what's going on in the Middle East now reverberates through a city like Leicester. It makes many people in the Muslim community very, very nervous. They feel under some threat. So does parts of the Jewish community. This is work that will have to go on. Whoever follows me at Leicester, I'm sure, will be involved in it. But it's been one of the great joys and satisfactions of being a bishop, working with people who come to God differently from the way we come, but live with a vivid sense of God in their lives. And that's something that's different from working with a secular Western culture. And that's what's made so much of what we've done a real challenge. In a city like Leicester, where so many people have arrived in the last 40 years, the bishop is always going to be somewhere at the centre of conversations with other faiths. A city like Leicester, global events are local events. They affect relationships between communities. And the bishop really is seen as the bishop of the whole community. People speak about our bishop, Muslims and Sikhs and Hindus do that. So that's been a real privilege to do what we can to deepen trust, confidence and communication between these communities through really challenging times.
I want to talk about something else that the cathedral was really involved in, which was the Richard III commemorations. But before we go there, can you just explain, I understand that when you got your job, Richard III was sort of predicted.
Well, when I was asked to be the Bishop of Leicester, I saw the appointment secretary from Downing Street, and he said, I think you'll have some challenges with the cathedral. It's a small parish church. It's not very well resourced. You need to think about how you can develop it. He said, one thing you might do is think about finding a relic. He said this tongue-in-cheek. But 15 years later, we managed to bury Richard III in the cathedral, and the effect has been electrifying. So we've more than quadrupled the number of visitors. We've had 120 media outlets attending on the reinterment, and it's had a huge effect on the morale of the city. And it's great to be leaving with the cathedral doing really well and right at the heart of the city's attention.
And what did that do to bringing community together again? Because it really, I came up and it was right at the heart.
It was buzzing. So we were in March, and about 70,000 people came out onto the streets to see the remains brought into the cathedral. 25,000 queued to see the coffin. And we had a very strong partnership with the city and the county, the universities and others to lay on these events. That partnership is still in place. And I think that's something the church can do really well, bring different parties together around a common cause. I think there's real opportunities to build on all that in Leicester in the years ahead now.
Other achievements that you've had include women bishops and getting that through. What are your reflections on your time in helping to achieve that?
Well, when I first got to Leicester, we had a vacancy for the role of what was then called the provost of the cathedral, now the dean. And we appointed the first woman provost of a cathedral, Vivian Fall, who's now Dean of York. That was seen as a little bit of a sort of mould breaker at the time. But all my ministry, I've wanted to see women in positions of leadership in the church. When I was first ordained, I joined the movement for the ordination of women. Right at the end of my time, 40 years later, the first woman diocesan bishop is just about to be ordained, and she will take my seat in the House of Lords when I leave. I'm delighted about that. I just wish we'd have done it 10 years earlier and we could have had a House of Bishops with the voice of bishops speaking into it. We really need that. And the more women bishops come onto the bench, I think the healthier and the more sensible the church will be.
What voice do you think they'll add?
Well, I hesitate to characterise what they might do, because I think we have to discover what they will add. But I think many of the procedures and many of the rather tortuous ways we've had to find our way through decisions really need to be challenged. And I hope that the women will challenge some of these and say, actually, the presentation of the gospel to the nation is urgent. We cannot let it constantly get mired in complicated political and synodical processes inside the church. Those are not the things that are going to lead to the reform and the renewal of the church going forward. And I think that the women that I know, who are extremely effective parish priests, archdeacons and deans, understand that. They bring a kind of immediacy and sometimes an impatience with process that I think we need.
There's current discussion going on about the he, she use of language within the liturgy. What are your observations on that?
I think it's extraordinary that it still presses people's buttons in this way. When I was installed in Leicester, I included a phrase in the order of service, "Hear us, O God, our Father and our Mother," in 1999. It created an earthquake all those years ago, and still the church does seem to be thinking about God as if God was a bit like a giant human being. With all the attributes of a human being, either maleness or femaleness. What the Christian tradition teaches us is that God is not an object or a person amongst other objects or persons. God is that being which transcends, creates and sustains all persons and all objects. Therefore, although we attribute characteristics of a human being to God and claim, of course, to see God in Jesus Christ, God is radically other than us, and all our descriptions and all of the attributes describe God by are simply partial. They're not ever the whole truth that we can say about God.
Looking forward to the future of the Church of England, what challenges do you think it faces?
Supremely, I think the challenge to demonstrate that the good news of God revealed in Jesus Christ absolutely is the good news for this nation. It's good news in terms of the way people experience love in their families. It's good news in the way people experience trust and confidence in their communities. It's good news in the way the nation understands itself at a time of considerable uncertainty. It's good news in terms of the way we relate to people of other faiths. It's good news everywhere. What it's not is a entry certificate for a club. The good news doesn't just belong to the church. The church's responsibility is to proclaim it, but it is good news for everyone. And I think the challenge facing the church, as we face an elderly congregations and sometimes shrinking congregations, how can we keep facing outwards to the world and not become introspective and over-concerned with ourselves. That seems to me to be the great challenge for the next 10 years or so.
What are you going to miss?
I'm going to miss lots of the people that I've worked with, people I've got really fond of, people who've become friends, and the habits of being a bishop, where there's so much variety, so many different things happening every day. It's almost intoxicating, probably addictive. I've got to break some of those habits and learn to live a slower, stiller, more contemplative life. But there are any number of events, special moments, special encounters, when suddenly God's love and God's richness has kind of burst upon me. And those are the moments I will always treasure and always be really, really thankful for.